Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host of the Alabama Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Ricky Addington.
Hello world.
Chris Morgan will be joining us very soon. We're going to be talking about Death Watch.
I'm excited.
Death Watch and some other stuff. I mean, to be honest, the Death Watch have a lot of units that we are comfortable with and aware of. They are inherently a Space Marine army, and they've gotten the Primaris treatment.
Yeah, it's like, you like Space Marines? How about you pay double for Space Marines?
That's not,
get some fun toys.
That's not the way it works, thankfully. and we can go over some point cost later on.
Oh, we better.
Yeah, I think it's in line. But one of the big things that they get is their special issue ammunition. But it doesn't apply to everything in the army. Like, for instance, I'll run down the list, but importantly, it doesn't apply to the Boltstorm gauntlets on aggressors.
Yeah, I think that should just be what we lead with right there. Aggressors do not get special issue ammunition.
Now,
which
we're going to jump around a little bit. Some of the stuff does apply to them, though. Some of the Death Watch stuff that you maybe couldn't have done outside of you couldn't have functionally done outside of a couple of chapters. And they do get a stratagem called the Teleportarium, which is 1 to 3 command points, which, you know, a battalion gets 5 now as opposed to the 3 it used to get. So you've got a little bit more to play around with. And it allows them to use this stratagem during deployment. For each command point spent on this stratagem, you can set up either 1 Death Watch infantry, which they are, or Death Watch dreadnought in the Teleportarium chamber instead of placing it on the battlefield. At the end of any of your movement phases, you bring him in 9 inches away.
So old Ricky is about to get a can of black spray paint out and repaint some aggressors black, is what I'm hearing. that's all I heard in that. Blah, 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 blah. Deep striking aggressors.
Deep strike aggressors. Yeah, I mean, you know that since they moved, the count is moving, you know, that they're not going to get to fire twice. But they are going to still automatically start in range if that is what you choose to do.
To even moving, like, that's still some good shooting come out of those guys. So,
you get to strategically apply them. See, right now, if you don't go first and you're lined up against something like, you know, something that can do 2 wounds a shot or whatever, then they may get eaten up before they get a chance to fire. And now that definitely won't happen.
My local kind of scene really ignored my aggressors for a long time. And then each opponent, after they eat, you know, double shooting from a squad of aggressors, has learned that is their that's their target. So slowly the ability of me to sneak my aggressors over the table has gotten worse and worse and worse. So now maybe my Dark Angels can have some Death Watch aggressors in there.
They moved up higher on the target scale.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So now being able to hide them off the table for a turn can be really good.
So this, I know we talked about what you couldn't use special ammunition on, but the special ammunition is pretty good for the units. And it's bolt pistols, bolt rifles, all the combi weapons, the mastercrafted stuff, stalker pattern bolt guns, storm bolters, twin bolt guns, and a few other things all get the special ammunition. And that does things like let you add 1 to your hit roll. You have to choose what you're firing, but you add 1 to your hit roll when you're targeting units in cover. Wound on a 2+, add 3 inches to the range, or I think improve the AP of the attack by 2. You know, so that's not bad to a maximum of -3, but that's -3 on a bolter round. You know,
that's
going to matter
deal.
Sometimes,
yeah.
Right?
-3, I mean, a bolt rifle, yeah, it's already -1. Going to -3 is fantastic. I mean, you're shooting with a plasma gun at that point, essentially, right?
So without the risk.
So even better. And don't forget, the Kraken bolt is 3 inches to a pistol, but 6 inches otherwise if it's not a pistol. And it also improves the AP by -1, right?
Oh yeah, improve the AP of the attack by -1. Yeah, by 1.
You're
to a maximum of a -2.
Yeah. So you're looking at AP, a bolt rifle shooting 30 inches is now going to 36 inches at AP -2. And don't forget what the stock is. It the stock or the long range one, which is like a 36 inch bolt rifle?
I believe it is. If it's not, it's 30, but this is.
No, because 30 is the rapid fire ones.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So 36. And all of a sudden, this mother is going out to 42 inches AP -2.
The special ammunition also doesn't work on the Inceptors. They have assault bolters.
Right,
that's
yeah.
not on the list. I know we're covering what you can't do, but it's really easy. These are the first things that I checked. I'm like, oh, goodness, what can I do? What can I do?
Look at all your super-duper units and see how they just got better in here. But, man, I'm telling you, just like me personally, I love every bolt rifle that an intercessor has. I think they all have very good
And your, the bolt rifle is 36 – or sorry, a 30-inch range of go to 36.
Exactly, rapid fire, and then 36 for the Stalker, which is, I think, heavy one, if I remember correctly. So the special issue ammo on an intercessor squad is just super duper to me. I think they're great.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the benefits of the Death Watch is that outside of just picking a unit, you can have the mixed unit
things
as troops. So you can add the intercessor, the reaver, the aggressor into a troop squad.
Yeah, I'm excited about being able to have Hellblasters in there and them not get so worried about getting charged, being able to back out and shoot some more. That's going to be crazy cool.
The rule for that is the mixed unit. A unit of intercessors can contain models with different toughness characteristics. In this case, use the toughness characteristics of the majority. So in case that comes up for things like the Inceptor and the Aggressor with a toughness 5 in that unit.
I was really excited about mixing the Primaris units together like you do with, you know, normal Marines in the Death Watch. I'm not blown away by abilities and stuff, but I mean it seems to be thematic, it seems to fit with what they do, and nothing seems out of place or overly powerful. So I was pretty pleased with it.
Let's think about this though. The Inceptors, you know, had the fly keyword and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And it says Inceptors can move across the models and terrain as if they were not there. In addition, when a unit of intercessors that includes any Inceptor falls back, it can shoot later that turn as if it could fly.
So exactly.
You're going to get these special rules.
Yep. So put your Hellblasters, add some Hellblasters in with your intercessors, and throw an Inceptor in there, and all of a sudden your Hellblasters don't really care if they got charged.
Well, if there's any now, I think this army is going to suffer competitively if you're if you're trying to make an elite force of Marines. You know, it's like really difficult to make that work without, you know, some interesting missions or a narrative story or, you know, whatever. But anytime we've seen in the past, rule stacking, when you stack up rules, it always becomes better than it was originally.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing that Death Watch does, you know, is they stack rules. That's what they did before with, even in 7th edition, that's what they did. And with Index, they were doing that as well. The big problem was when you start doing that and start adding all these bells and whistles and all these cool things, the points could become insanely high. So you got to be able to balance that with, you know, how do you get that benefit and how do you keep it efficient enough to where you can stay competitive on the table?
So like the relentless advance of the aggressors is going to apply to, not now they don't get to double shot, but they will get to shoot even if they did move their heavy weapons without the neg. So again, rule stacking.
Right, yeah.
Can be pretty
good. And so again, and that goes back to the intercessors with their assault bolt guns. So if they take the assault ones, you throw an aggressor in there, and now they're moving 6 inches plus D6 each turn. You know, so now your intercessors are aggressing and shooting off special issue ammo as well. So that to me is great. I think it's like, what is your plan with your guys? You know, if you're planning on moving up to get on objectives quickly, you throw an aggressor in there and let them aggress. You know, if you're
aggressing,
exactly. You know, if you're wanting to stay back, you know, with some put some Hellblasters in there and give them the rapid fire or maybe even the long range rifles, and you're sitting back in the backfield pumping rounds out there. So I love how you can really mix and match these guys and really change up the style of what each squad does. I think you can build these guys to do exactly what you're going to need them to do on the table, and maybe bring them into your normal army and kind of plug a hole that maybe your current army isn't really able to handle as effectively.
So infantry, bikers, and dreadnoughts, if you have a dedicated Death Watch detachment, get the mission tactics rule. They get the OBSEC, as we have come to know and love it.
Right.
And then the mission tactics. And this is something you choose before the battle. This is the Führer tactics. when attacking enemy unit with a troops battlefield roll, you roll wound rolls of one, and then the rest of the tactics are all for the other battlefield rolls, but they let you reroll wound rolls of one. So I can see how this would automatically stack up with the special issue ammunition of mm-hmm. always wounding things on a 2+, unless it's a vehicle.
Right.
Or whatever, to automatically have a benefit that you get to kind of survey your opponent's army before you pick your mission tactic.
Yeah, it's really going to be able to, you know, you're going to be able to like take out what you need to take out when you need to do it. And so there's that. And then we'll get into it, obviously, with the other abilities that let you change that tactic and with what stratagems. Well,
to change yeah. it, adapt it as if you were. So you wipe out their HQs, then you yeah. go on and alter it to do their troops or, you know,
yeah.
you can choose. But there are ways to manipulate that mission tactic mid-game.
Yeah. And just to be able to do that will – if it plays out how I think, you know, it will play out or how it should play out, I think it would be a really fun game to, you know, watch that. Like – you know, watch a Death Watch army come in and focus down this and then focus down this. And just to see that kind of play style, I think it'll be a lot of fun.
If you can get an early advantage, or, I mean, let's say everything goes well with guard.
Right.
I don't mind saying that. So, I mean, if you're looking to have a funnel, you know, basically a generation, a command point generator for this army, it's easy to do that with guard. Take a Death Watch attachment. I'm not going to beat that up because you guys know I feel like that's kind of the perfect complement to any elite force. Is a bunch of dudes and tanks.
Well, you never go wrong.
Yeah. So you're able to kind of unlock things, and if you could really get a little bit of an advantage early through either some luck with your complete Death Watch force or because you put some real pressure on the enemy with some other things, then you can start to do this where you're talking about where they come down, they eliminate one thing, or you thought you were going to need them to do X. You thought you were going to need them to take out their elites, but something else in your army took it out or took out the two units, and now you can switch it up to move on to something else.
Yeah, it also it's just going to kind of it also helps just if you made a bad call, you know, like and a thing to think about as well though is you know, you could use that to mess with them if you declare that your tactic is going to be to, you know, focus down their troops. They may try to play real defensive with their troops. You know, so then you could just switch it up and go with something maybe they got a little more aggressive with, and change that. To be able to change that on the fly will make these guys, you know, really kind of scary because you don't know what they're going to try to gun down next.
I know we're really early in the show, but let's take a quick break and we'll grab Chris Morgan in with us.
Christopher!
Hang on one second.
FTN is brought to you by Bell of Lost Souls. Check out www.bols.org for the best daily hobby articles on the web.
Hey everybody, we are back. I still got Ricky and we picked up Chris.
It's on now.
So heavy.
So we're talking about, of course, Death Watch and how the profiles of things are similar because they're marine bodies, but and we're talking about how to funnel command points into their cool stratagems, and they do. They've got some good stratagems depending on what you're fighting in your area. And you might only need one or two units of Death Watch to make the most of this stuff. They have kind of a suite of stratagems that one package is good for herding Xenos races. And then another is good for herding battlefield rolls. So, we already talked about rerolling ones for certain battlefield rolls to wound with the mission tactics, but then they've got a series of doctrines that allow you to add one to the wound rolls for the attacks when targeting certain battlefield rolls, and those each take two command points to funnel.
Yeah, well, with two command points each, I mean, that adds up pretty quickly, wouldn't you say? Even with
It does. I mean, but see, you got two for free now.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, they already talked about it, you know, that they've got the command trait to where you can, on a 5+, get them back. So I don't think you're going to be, like, super-duper hurting for command points. You know, I think you're going to be able to...
You're just going to need this once or twice.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to use a fast attack battlefield roll, you know, you're trying to put down somebody's heavy support or flyer roll. You know, adding one to the roll, you know, use this stratagem just before a Death Watch unit from your army attacks an enemy with the X battlefield roll, add one to the wound rolls. Yeah, if say you got these bolters, or you know you're wounding things on fives, it then goes to fours, and that's mm-hmm. radically changing the odds, especially if you're using something that's neg 3 AP.
Yeah, that the special issue ammunition is going to be incredibly benefited by that. Now, the wording on it just kind of, I don't know if this is just me being picky because I've been doing a lot of looking at wording stuff in the judges' chats I've been in. But when it says attacks an enemy unit, I'm sure somebody is going to out there go, well, does that mean attacks every time or just using your attacks as close combat? I feel like it's an every time thing.
I think it's attacks. Whether you're striking close combat, whether you're striking and shooting.
Yeah, this is where something like a style guide would help GW with their wording when writing stuff.
Well, I don't think there's any way to split the hairs on attacks. If you are attacking, that is it. The other package is the ones that are anti-Xenos, and there's one called Stem the Green Tide. And this, now we already know that a mob of orcs charging you is bad news.
Not where you want to be.
And if you are 5 to 8 to 10 Marines, you don't want to get charged by 30 orcs. But if you find you find yourself in that situation, use this stratagem immediately before firing Overwatch with a Death Watch unit from your army against a charging orc unit. Now, this doesn't say orc infantry or whatever. It just says orc. Now, the rest of the stratagem may matter, but your opponent must subtract one from their charge distance for each model in the charging unit that was slain by your unit's Overwatch fire.
I mean, aggressors basically just became charge proof.
You got some flamers. Let's say it's an 8-inch charge, you kill 3 models, you've backed them up a significant amount as far as odds of charging go.
Yeah, I just got to wait for my buddy Rich to roll 12s on his charges every time.
Well, it's going to happen. Right? It's going to happen. But yeah. This is 2 command points, but like when you need it, you might as well use it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the big thing. If you just take out a few, I mean, if you kill 3, that could prevent a huge chunk of the back of that squad, because a lot of times, you know, you're just getting that front row just right up there where they need to be to make that charge. Then you've still got all those guys behind that are going to have to be trying to pile in.
Oh, that's a good point, too. Yeah.
So those guys are going to be, you know, if you kill 3 models, those guys are 3 inches farther back, which means a big bulk of your line is not getting in there. So then they got to start working their way around, and they just may not get into swing.
There's a stratagem here that lets you remove all the marker light counters. And it's an anti-Tau one. The intercepting volley, the one that's the anti-Eldari, is kind of nice. Use this stratagem immediately after your opponent moves an enemy Eldari unit that can fly in their movement phase. Pick a Death Watch unit from your army within 12 inches of it. That unit can immediately shoot at the enemy unit as if it were your shooting phase, but you must subtract 1 from all the resulting hit rolls.
I love that one.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit, especially because it's not just Craft World's Eldar it works against. It works against Dark Eldar, too.
Yeah, the fly is sprinkled around lots of different things. So things like Jebikes, I think, had the fly keyword.
Yep.
Yeah, it's you'll be paying attention to that. I'll say that. The synaptic severance, which is neat. This lets your unit target synapse characters, even if they are not the closest enemy unit. Now with Tyranids, you do get to, I mean, you kind of shoot the big bugs most of the time, but you could potentially snap out some others that you wouldn't get to be able to target.
Well, think about maybe like a backfield neurothrope or something like that, right? And it says a Death Watch unit, so it doesn't have to be something like an infantry squad.
Bolt pistols, yeah.
this could be like, say, one of the Death Watch flyers. Yeah, just do that. And you can move right up and you can shoot at a character synapse creature like a broodlord or a neurothrope and kind of cripple their backfield synapse support. I like that quite a bit.
This next one, Overkill, is the anti-Necron one, and I think it is probably one of the most brutal ones. Playing against some Necrons recently, they kind of rely on this will be back rolls or reanimation protocols. Use this stratagem at the beginning of your opponent's turn before they use the reanimation protocol's ability of a Necron unit within 12 inches of a Death Watch unit from your army. So you got to be close. Your opponent subtracts 1 from any reanimation protocols they make for that unit this turn.
Something like Wraiths? I'd like that.
Against well, the race, the Canoptic, they have to burn a stratagem for that. So that's like a double, a double whammy.
Just sit there and wait for them. As soon as they say it, just be like, oh, hey, bruh,
overkill.
Have a little card. Just take a card, like a bereavement card, you know, be like I'm sorry for your loss or whatever. And then slide it over to them and be like, okay, go ahead and roll. But yeah, like,
be like some kind of parchment looking envelope or something.
Hear ye, I am playing overkill. And then make them roll. As someone just plays a flute or something in their ear. I don't know. But, like, yeah, that one can be brutal. I like it.
Yeah, that would be. That's a serious, some serious shade throw,
yeah,
as it were.
Every one of these, though, targeting scramblers is another one I think that is just going to have somebody, like, throw their drink at you. You know, like, it's just
I don't know. I think the Tau probably still have enough shots to take out a handful of Marines.
Yeah, probably. But
I'm sure they do.
It's just, but, you know, they put all their marker lots on you, and then you're just like, oh, okay, here, take those off. I think it's just going to be funny just to watch. But every one of these seem like just a middle finger to your opponents. The whole way their army works, it's like Death Watch has one little middle finger for each of them. So it's kind of...
What I like about targeting scramblers in particular is that it's remove all marker-like counters from that unit.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to be... You know, just the ones that you get hit with from the unit that's targeting you. It can be any of the ones before. So yeah. It's just like, all right, you've spent all this time building up your marker lights for this one thing that you feel like you absolutely have to kill, and they're gone.
Just somebody holding an objective or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was looking at that and I was thinking, like, how cagey Tau players are going to have to be against Death Watch. It's like, you know, do I put a couple of marker lots here and a couple over here or one here and hope that he uses scramblers on that and then go and try to use it somewhere else? Because, you know, you'd have to use it immediately after it's been hit. So you can't wait until they've all been. Right? You can't wait till they've all been hit. You got to do it immediately after that unit is hit. So, you know, do I shoot one or two marker lights here, let them hit and make you burn it, and then try to really go for something else? So I think it's going to make some interesting decisions for Tau players and for Death Watch players. That'll be neat to see how those play out.
Another neat stratagem I found is the optimized salvo. Now, remember, one of the core concepts of 8th edition is that units can split fire. Like, and I'm only saying that as the rule that we're comfortable understanding.
Right.
Your models can fire at whatever they want. Well, the optimized salvo is a one command point stratagem that lets you use a different type of special ammunition for every firer, if you want.
That's cool.
Oh, man. Huh. Okay. Well, that gives you something to keep track of.
Yeah. Use this stratagem in your shooting phase immediately before choosing targets for a Death Watch unit from your army with special issue ammunition ability. Different models in that unit can use different kinds of ammunition for that attack. Select which models will fire, which type of ammunition before any hit rolls are made. So that's the normal shooting rules, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just clarifying it for us here.
But I'm sitting here looking. Yeah, it's neat. I'm just sitting here at the special issue ammo, and I'm like, how am I going to like use this? But for the most part, I'm kind of just like, yeah, okay, because usually all my bolters are shooting here, and my missile launchers are shooting here. I think it's really going to depend on how you've got that squad set up, but there's going to be situations where that's going to be great. Like if there's just one or two guys left in cover and you just really need them to die and you still need to kill something else, split them up that way, I guess.
There are a couple of different ways that you can actually buff up the damage of a bolter or what have you. And I shouldn't say bolter, but I'll read this. There is a warlord trait called Castellan of the Black Vault. Add one to the damage characteristic of one weapon carried by your warlord. Note that this cannot be a relic of the Vigilant and does not affect a weapon using the Bane Bolts of Erija. The Bane Bolts also let you add one to the damage of any special issue ammunition fired by the bearer. But that's a relic. So like a Power Sword doing two damage, a Thunder Hammer?
Oh, I mean, with the Artisan of War Warlord trait from BA, we all know the glory that is having a 4 damage Thunder Hammer. I mean, there's nothing more satisfying than killing a Bane Blade in one round of combat.
Yeah, I've heard it's good. But does this have to be on... Well, it's got to be on a character,
right? It's a Warlord trait, so it has to be on
the Warlord. Yeah, it's on the Warlord. So Are there new warlords, or is it still just Watchmaster and Watch Captain Artemis?
There's the Watchmaster, the Watch Captain Artemis, Watch Captain and Terminator armor, Primaris Watch Captain Librarians, Primaris Librarian. There's a Primaris, there's a Chaplain, Chaplain Terminator armor, Primaris Chaplain. Those are all the HQs.
So we got some options.
There is an apothecary in the elite section. I don't know if they had apothecaries before. There's a Primaris apothecary.
Nice.
I think if Call does any updates, he's going to name those ones the secondaries. I'm just trying to organize these in my head.
So that Castellan the Black Vault does allow you to add one to the damage characteristics of one weapon carried by your warlord.
And hey, Paul.
Yep.
Can I interrupt there real quick?
Yeah.
That warlord trait, it's just add one to the weapon or to the damage characteristic of a weapon?
Yeah.
So
a one weapon by the warlord.
Okay, so a Watchmaster has a guardian spear, right? It's got a shooting and a melee profile. So that's the same weapon, right? Or do you consider this two separate weapons?
I would say yes.
So the guardian spear has shooting and melee profile.
It's two different profiles, so you could almost say...
The guardian spear for shooting is a two damage weapon. I don't know if it was two damage in the
index. It was, yeah. It was two and then D3.
That's the melee, yes.
For the melee, yeah. So would that go to 3 and D3 plus 1, or would you have to pick?
Oh, man. I don't know if I'm prepared to answer that question.
I'm not ready to jump into that quagmire, but I can see a TO needing to address that
I think it's pretty easy, because we look at it the same way with something like the Icarus Storm Cannon or whatever it's called on the Adeptus Mechanicus thing, is that all of those different weapons it shoots are all part of the same weapon.
Well, like the Watchmaster is a single model armed with a Guardian Spear, frag grenades, and crack grenades.
That would be my argument to anybody that yes, it is a single weapon.
So it is clear my crack grenade is going to be D3 plus 1.
Yeah, go with the crack grenades. Yep, there you go.
Well, frag grenade,
drink that optimization, Paul Murphy.
D6 grenade with 2 damage apiece.
That would be insulting.
Until you lay out some aggressors with it.
No, like the aggressor's player would feel insulted. You did what?
I mean, it's no Death Guard grenades, but okay, we'll go with it.
Yeah, it doesn't say it can't be a relic, or and it can't be using the Bane bolts. Which models with the special ammunition add 1 to the damage of any special issue ammunition fired by the bearer. In addition, for each wound roll of a 6+ made for any special issue ammunition fired by the bearer, the target suffers a mortal wound in addition to the normal damage. So the main bolts are not bad. For a relic, that you're probably going to be getting aggressive, or people are going to be getting aggressive towards you. But you know, it's not bad. The Guardian Spear shooting profile does get to access the special issue ammunition.
Yeah, that holds up with what it was before.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's not bad. Shooting some, what is it? That is D3 plus 1 damage for the Bane Bolts. And then you're getting you're getting mortal wounds on sixes. And what is it? 24-inch range?
24-inch rapid fire 1 is what it says here. So,
I mean, that
AP
is...
AP minus 1 already. So, I mean, gosh, you get that thing down to AP what, minus 3? With now, 3 damage?
I mean, I haven't, you know, kind of gone through all the rest of the relics for optimization yet, but that's the one, I was drawn to that because it's extra damage.
Yeah.
But there is the tome of the Ectoglades. At the start of each of your turns, pick a mission tactic. Until the start of your next turn, you can choose to apply either the effects of the mission tactics that is currently active or the mission tactic you have chosen.
I like that one.
That's within 6 inches. Of the bearer each time it attacks. So you're castling up at that point, but
yeah, but it's letting you take out multiple threats in the same turn, while being completely optimized. You know, you're using 2 mission tactics at one time, so you know, you're taking out their tanks and their troops at the same time and not having to try to focus on all of this and none of this. So I mean that's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's bad at all. Some of these others are kind of once per battle use. And then there's the Dominus Aegis, which used to be pretty strong from, what was it, 7th edition? This is the Dominus Aegis replaces the bearer's storm shield. The bearer has a 3+ invulnerable save. In addition, if the bearer does not move in your movement phase, then until the start of your next movement phase, friendly Death Watch models within 6 inches of the bearer gain a 5+ invulnerable save.
Cool.
I think that's similar to what it did before, but it wasn't just for Death Watch. And now it is. When I say before, I think in 7th edition.
I don't even remember what it did in 7th, if I'm honest.
I think it gave you a bubble of invul for units. I could be wrong. It has been a while, but it is now just for Deathwatch.
7th edition was what, like 8 years ago? Does anybody remember?
It was, what was it, 11 months ago?
Dude, it feels like years.
It's a brave new world, man.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Who cares what it did in 7th? Yeah, right. In 8th, it's
look,
cool.
I'm just giving perspective. If you had a model.
Yeah, we're moving on.
If you had a model with, you know, a Thunderhand, a Power Maul, and the Dominus Aegis, this is what it does now.
Yeah, and use it, because it's cool.
Sword called the Thief of Secrets. When setting up the bearer, pick one of the following keywords. Orc, Tyranid, Tau, Empire, Eldari, or Necrons. Reroll failed wound rolls for this weapon when attacking enemy units with that keyword. This is a -3 AP damage to power sword, essentially.
Now, tell me, Ricky, is that a Dark Angel sword or is that a secret?
We'll never tell.
Yeah. They do get the Librarius discipline. I believe these are all the same disciplines, are all the same psychic powers from the Space Marine book. Velatime, Might of Heroes, Psychic Scourge, Fear of the Ancients, Psychic Fortress, and Null Zone.
Yeah, that sounds all about the same.
They wisely did not take the Dark Angels powers and add them in, so good on you.
So let's talk about some points.
It's because they're secret.
So an Aggressor, base does not include the Warrior, 21 points. Let's go with the Inceptor. That is, so we can try to get a one-to-one comparison. Anybody got the chapter approved? What
oh,
is
goodness.
It? Intercessor.
Yeah, a base intercessor squad is 90 points. Well, with the rapid fire bolt guns.
How many points apiece?
The intercessor is 18 points base.
Same cost as it is for the.
Are you kidding me?
Same cost. 18 points.
Are you kidding me? So
are there bolt guns more?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a good point. Are there bolt guns?
So more? What is it? They have the bolt rifle.
Yeah.
Yes.
1 point.
How many?
1 point.
It's 1 point.
Okay, so that means it's 1 point more expensive than it normally would be.
Oh, gee, I don't know if I'm going to take them now.
A bolt gun and a bolt rifle and a bolt pistol are all 1 point.
Okay.
Heavy bolt pistol is 1 point. The Absolver bolt pistol, I think that's on the Reavers, 1 point.
Yeah, that's also on some of the characters, too. But, no, I think that that's... You know, I almost wanted it to be free just because we know how elite infantry armies struggle. And really always have.
1 point for all those options, though. I can't hate.
I can't. No, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at all. I think it's probably, if they hadn't done it, people would have been mad just because, well, why don't my intercessors do that? No, I think that's probably about as much as I would want them to pay for that.
Did the Inceptors stay at 25 points, or did they go up or down?
The Inceptor is 25 points, and what is it? What is their gun called?
Let's see.
The Assaulter?
Yeah.
It's 10 points. I think that's the same.
Yeah, that's exactly the same.
Well, yeah, they're not using... Right. Those can't use
special ammunition. There's not an across the board. It seems like things with special ammunition, you pay a point for that.
Yeah. Aggressors, 21 points here as well?
21 points, yeah. And okay. Boltstorm Gauntlets...
Should be 12 points apiece.
What are they called? The auto bolt
storm? Auto bolt storm gauntlets.
That's 12 points apiece, yeah.
Yep. Well, which makes sense because they're not getting any better yet.
Special. Yeah. So the Deathwatch frag cannon. Now everyone was so hot on the frag cannon originally, and it's 8-inch. The frag round is 8-inch, but it's 2d6 and automatically hits target strength 6, negative at 1 AP, 1 damage. The shell is assault 2, 24-inch, strength 7, -2 AP, 2 damage. If the target is within half range of this weapon, its attacks are resolved at strength 9, -3 AP.
I love the versatility in that gun.
That's expensive.
It is.
I mean, it's 25 points for the frag cannon.
Yeah.
But you talk about, say, orcs overwatching a unit with a frag cannon, they're probably not making it to combat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, probably not. Not unless, I mean, they really try to avoid it by staying outside of the range and then charging.
And then what do you do?
But then they're 8 inches, they're 9 away, and then you're
knowing.
Between a high likelihood of failing or losing a crap ton of balls.
Yep, knowing that stratagem is in your arsenal, that, you know, if you just kill a few, all of a sudden they go from an 8-inch charge to an 11-inch charge.
God, wouldn't that? I mean, I know you declare that they declare the charge, you know, so you're within 12 at the start, but then you end up, it ends up being like a 17-inch charge or something.
Yeah, sorry.
That would be miserable. That is definitely worth the feel bads of 2 command points. That is. Now, granted, we don't know. We have no indication what an orc codex would look like, but I'm sure there's going to be a way for them to manipulate their charge, you know, when we see that. And I think they get some manipulation now with the index, but you're still turning like with an average. What is the average roll? So 7 wounding on 3s. So what is that? 4 to 5 wounds with -1 AP. So that's 4 to 5 dead orcs. The single frag cannon is adding 4 to 5 inches to an orc charge. If they start their charge within 8 inches.
Yeah. I mean, that could push them back. I think the moral there is don't get within 8 inches.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they've got
2 command points left, do not get within 8 inches.
Yeah.
Or get 1 inch away, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
You better be 8.1 or 1 inch.
You don't want your game-making charge to be made just by one unit at any point in time as an orc against Deathwatch.
You do not. Let's talk about one of the other signature units here, and that's the Corvus Blackstar.
Thank you. It's my favorite. It's my favorite flyer. It's the best looking flyer in the Imperium, I think. So I'm excited.
Well, we'll talk about it, right?
I don't like that tone, Paul.
Corvus Blackstar's base points are 150. This is single model equipped with twin assault cannons and 2 Storm Strike missile launchers. So the twin assault cannon, heavy 12, 24 inch range, same profile. And then the Storm Strike missiles are heavy 1. Now, they're 72-inch range, strength 8, neg 3, 3 damage apiece, but it's only 2 shots a turn. The Storm Strike missiles are 21 points apiece, so that's 42, so that's 192, plus a twin assault cannon, which, how many points is that? 44 points. So 192 plus 44. Right. What is that, 200 and, I don't know, 30-something, 36, something like that? I'm flipping pages. I can't add right now.
I can't either.
But it's a fair amount of points. But it does have 14 wounds as a flyer.
Yeah, that's the same amount as the Storm Raven. So,
it's got the Infernum Halo Launcher. You can reroll save rolls of 1 for this model if it's equipped with the Infernum Halo Launcher and has a supersonic ability. And it does. But not if you hover, of course. But if you're zipping around, you do get to reroll your saves of 1. So there's some survivability in there. And you can also add the Black Star Rocket Launcher to it if you want, which has shorter range, but it's heavy D6. So but it's better at taking out flyers. You add 1 to hit things with the fly keyword.
I've always been a fan of this flyer in 8th edition. I feel like as a flyer, it's probably one of the better ones out there.
Well, you can also use the Dracos Warhead, which adds 1 to hit rolls for units if you're shooting at units within cover. Now, it doesn't have any AP on this weapon, and it's only strength 4, but you're going to hit them a lot better. So really good for taking out some of that Xeno stuff, the T3 stuff.
Can you clarify one thing for me? Can it carry Primaris?
Oh, Ricky.
It's going to say cannot, I'm assuming, because they FAQ'd it to not. I just want to see if they ever reverse that.
Yeah, it cannot transport Primaris models.
GW, why do you hate me? Why can we just not get some good Primaris
transportation? They can carry bikes, you know?
I know! That makes it even weirder. I can park a bike in this thing, but...
Takes up the space of 3 other models, though.
Yeah, but Brother Zachariah here, because he's a little bit taller, ain't fitting in this bad boy.
That dude with the eagle and the banner can just cruise in this thing.
He's totally good. They need to give me either a really good explanation that I can get behind, or they need to start letting Primaris share.
The physics of transports don't exist the same way in the 40K world that they do in...
Don't get me started on Primaris and regular transport.
That is all you need to know.
Yeah, just move on with our lives.
Segregation.
Get your repulsor.
No, 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 no.
And make little swoosh swoosh noises with it.
And not have enough points to play the rest of the army because the repulsor is
you
what?
You get an apothecary, you get to maximize the life of your Marines.
Fair. Okay, moving on. All right. even with that against it, I still think the Black Star is one of the coolest looking models in the game.
Oh, and you know that all these Death Watch bits or kits come with enough bits to bling out your Primaris.
Oh, yeah.
And those are just pretty models.
I'm definitely going to figure out a way to put some Primaris into my Dark Angels.
Where I'm going, though, is that I'm not sure that the Corvus Blackstar is a super competitive choice. I don't think it has enough guns. You can put Hurricane Bolters on it, though, which are Rapid Fire 6.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a Hurricane Bolter.
Yeah, just one, yeah.
Apologies, a Hurricane Bolter. But I still just, I just don't think it's putting out enough damage for that point cost, without the ability to travel around your Marines. I think you're going to, if you're going to be trying to play the Mobile Strike Force, you're going to be using the Tail of Batarium, using your command points.
Yeah. When I'm thinking about it, I like Blackstar for dropping guys off and getting them in flamer range.
Fair. And the frag cannon and stuff. I mean,
exactly. And it's so many eggs in one basket. It's an expensive plane. Your frag cannons are already expensive, you know, and in an expensive Death Watch unit. So it is a lot of investment, but my gosh, they will murder whatever they go up against. So it could play. I think it's easy to shoot one single flyer off the table on turn one.
I mean, but by the time that you add up all the points, I mean, let's think about it. Are you maybe better off with a Land Raider if you're only using it to move dudes across the table with that 2+ armor save?
Yeah. I mean, probably.
I don't know what the answer is. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to accomplish what you're asking to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think though, with the Death Watch, that if you're going to play them, you need to really maximize on what they're good at, which is having bolters or having things with the special ammunition rule that you can then modify and like stack up all of these bonuses to take out high value targets of the enemy.
Like I'm really having a hard time looking at them and not just saying, why am I not putting entire just swaths of 95 point Primaris intercessor squads on there, just all over the table.
You put in a four, you know, what is it, a 35 point Inceptor too, to give them that ability to fall back and shoot.
Yeah, I mean that's not bad. there's some good quality in that, and just think about that. Like, you know, everybody likes special issue ammo in, you know, like Space Marine armies. But the big thing is it's always so expensive. Nobody wants to pay for it. It never really seems to pay off. But like when your entire army of Primaris Marines and all of your intercessors are rocket special issue ammo, dude, that's going to do some work.
I think if you apply it like very, very surgically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best way to go about doing it.
I think you're going to have to, this is going to have to be a book of good decisions. You're not going to have enough units to really, I mean, if you're going monofaction, right? You know, you throw in your obligatory Imperial Guard platoon of uncreativity plus one, then, you know, it's whatever you can make some mistakes. You can throw some of those units away, but the Death Watch units, they've got to turn over for your investment.
I don't think we clarified, and I matter of fact, I know we didn't, but the we're talking about mixing units into the intercessor squad. The unit contains one intercessor sergeant and four intercessors, and it can include up to five additional models in any combination of intercessors, hellblasters, inceptors, reavers, or aggressors. About also dropping stuff in, and you know that you have to have half your army on the table based on power level. We haven't, I don't know if we've covered this in explicitly in previous episodes, but sometimes just adding one more model to a unit doubles that power level. Like I think we did, like we talked about Sanguinary Guard, how adding one extra Sanguinary Guard takes it to power level, I don't know, like 500 or something.
Right.
But just adding one scout, adding a sixth scout, I think takes it up to like power level 8. So so that something like that gives you a bigger cushion for what you choose to deep strike or what, you know, teleport somehow appear on the battle later or whatever. And then the adding these things. So like an aggressor adds +2 power rating to the unit per model, and an inceptor adds +3 power rating per model. And the rest of the stuff is one. Sorry, the hellblasters are 2, inceptors are 3, aggressors are 2. So I think that there's an ability there to like really maximize that. Like, so this unit of intercessors with an inceptor is now power level 8, and that's just 6 dudes. So minimizing what you're exposing on the table, giving you a bigger pad to stack points and power level into the reserves.
Yeah. Did we see any points changes or anything with just the regular Death Watch kill team? Did anything change there, or as far as points go there, just because I'm wondering, well, is there an advantage to going with them
they
over?
Get the, they get a, it's not the kill team anymore. It's the veterans. Veterans okay. are a troop choice.
Okay.
And that gives you a veteran, watch sergeant, black shield, terminator, biker, or vanguard veteran. So I think that's what you're referring to as the kill team. They're just right. veterans in this book.
Okay.
And so it's the biker, the terminator. It's what you, it's the box set that you got before and what you were playing before. Yes, it is absolutely still there. Each marine is 16 points apiece. The veteran, the biker base is 25 points. Black shield is 16. Terminator is 31. And the vanguard veteran is 18 points. So none of that includes the war gear, but that's the base cost.
That all looks about the same.
Yeah. Same thing kind of goes here. Five veterans plus one Terminator takes you up to a power level of 12. I mean, I know we're not talking about playing with power level as your metric, but that does factor into specifically what you can do track later.
I think that is so easily manipulated. I almost don't even think about it, really.
Well, I mean, you have to think about it if you're building your list to do that. You would hate to be off by one power level and have some opponent rain righteous fire upon you, you know. But because I think this is going to be an army that primarily wants to manipulate that if you're playing these guys.
Yeah, I mean, especially any elite army is going to have to be really concerned with when they come down, where they come down, and how they come down onto the table.
Now,
and
if big squads of this stuff, like a 10-man unit of veterans, you have you're running a morale problem, maybe. Terminator, if you have a Terminator in the unit, they get unflinching. The unit automatically passes morale test if it contains any Terminators.
Nice.
Well, I mean, if you're doing a bigger squad, I can see that paying off pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I like the way you can kit out Death Watch Terminators. Those guys can be, well, I mean, the points, you can make a Death Watch Terminator cost.
So a Cyclone Missile Launcher, a Lightning Claw, a Thunderhammer.
Melt a gun on Stone it and everything. It's everything.
Just like put glue on all the arms and the head and throw drop it in a bitch bucket.
Whatever comes out.
Yep. Hey, he can ride in the Black Star.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he can. How many extra? That's got to be two extra feet.
He could be holding his assault cannon up in the air, like he's raising his hand. He's still rides.
So somebody like draw me a comic of a Terminator with like a Cyclone missile launcher and like two assault cannons walking into a Storm Raven or something, or like one of the Corvus Black Stars, and just a sad Primaris Marine looking dejectedly up the ramp, like
turning
you're too big, bro.
Yeah, you can't, no room. Two wounds in cover, 2+ armor save. I mean, they don't need a crutch. The black crutch. The Corvus Black crutch.
We'll just walk it. We'll walk it. We'll put an aggressor with them, and we'll just hoof it.
Just run across, and then, yeah, that's it. You just slingshot that. You think about that, too, with charging. Let's say you built a somewhat melee-heavy army. You can get that extra bit of movement from your dude, the Intercessor. So the Inceptor.
The Inceptor, yeah.
And then you do a little bit of little slingshot engaged.
Yep.
I know, you know, we kind of hammered in the fact this is going to be an elite army. So, like, you're going to get to do these tricks with one or two really good units, but they're still pretty good tricks.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I think looking at it from a troop standpoint, if you're just wanting to get a battalion in there to get some extra points or something, you could do a lot worse than 3 5-man intercessor squads with special issue ammunition. That's
true.
That is a fantastic troop's choice.
Also, being able to do that extra range, just on their base guns, and then being able to even add more range to that if you wanted to. I mean, it lets you threaten a lot of things that people, you know, you might be able to drop on folks.
Yeah. I mean, even if you look at it, like me, I rarely ever have thought about running the long range bolt rifles, the Stalkers of, what, 36 inch range. But being able to sit back in a backfield.
I don't think I ever answered you on that. I just kind of nodded.
Yeah, I'm
the Stalker bolt rifle is 36 inch heavy.
Okay,
negative AP base.
Right. Think about that. That you could sit back at 42 inches on an objective in cover and be shooting 42 inches away with strength 4 AP minus 3 shots.
Yeah, and potentially rerolling wounds.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Death Watch Intercessors. I mean, I think, to me, that is one of the standout units of this book, is just Death Watch Intercessors.
Yeah. No, when you put it that way, it makes a lot of sense. And they're not a ton of points. I mean, a 5-man unit. Okay, let's talk about this. A 5-man unit is 10 wounds.
Yep.
With a 2+ save, being able to potentially fire from 36 to 42 inches away.
I mean, to me, they're a no-brainer because, I mean...
Well, we've talked about it in previous episodes. If you just describe the stats, people go, that doesn't sound like a bad unit.
Yeah. And then you say, oh, well, guess what? They're 95 points. And they're like, oh. But the thing is just a regular intercessor squad is a good troops choice. Like, since the points came down on the Primaris stuff and all that, and people have finally been playing them more, but I've been running intercessors for pretty much all of 8th, and I'm in love with them. I swear by them. And now all of a sudden, for 5 more points, they have gained so much versatility that it's ridiculous. And I think they're fantastic. And I'm honestly I'm trying to figure out how to add some of them into my army to give me a little more versatility.
You should start replacing Dark Angels.
I know. I'm telling you, it's a little bit of black paint.
Only
here
one
and there.
Shade, one more Nuln oil wash on that army in there.
That's what I'll just dip them in some Nuln oil and leave them for a day or two, and I'll be good.
Well, guys, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and do a hobby segment. This is going to be about some patina.
Ooh,
sounds delicious.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by Dicehead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hob supplies, and comics, they have it all.
Hey everybody, we are back. We haven't done a hobby segment in a little bit. A lot of stuff been going on, tournaments and whatever. We still got Louisville Slugger coming up. I have finished the missions. The primer missions are under review from my buddy John Marshall and from the Bourbon Brothers Gaming Group. That should be up very soon. Looking forward to hearing some feedback from that, getting this stuff out there, at least give the style of the event to folks. It's an aggressive mission set. I think it's going to be fun to play. See how it goes. I want to talk about this White Dwarf issue. This is for the May 2018. On page 127, there is a shield recipe here. And the issue is about painting Deepkin. And I think it's real easy to go to the Nihilized Oxide route when you start trying to do that kind of rust and patina on things. But I like the way they go about doing this. And it seems pretty easy. I have not done it this particular way. And I'll tell you what I haven't used. We've of course used, we've burnished metal for our existence, especially since Agrax Earthshade came out. But they go with Runeward Brass as the base, which is not my go-to most of the time. I've got a brass color that I go to, and I've got the Retributor Armor color that I go to, that gold color. I don't branch out to the brass very much, but it gives that good base coat for when they do go with the Kolia green shade on top of it.
Well, we know how you feel about green washes.
Well,
so.
I've used the Kolia green shade before when I was painting Sons of Horus.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've got a Luna Wolf's army, and I was doing some Legion of the Damned to go with that army, but I wanted them to fit theme wise. So I thought it'd be cool to paint the evolution of their armor, so they would still look like they thematic wise came on the same bus.
Right.
But they would look different, so people would automatically recognize what the Legion of the Damned, they were something else. They were something different. And so I did a Kolia green shade wash over a gray color, and it gave me what I thought was a pretty good Sons of Horus color. Now, it wasn't the paint tutorial off of the Forge World site, but it gave me something that I was looking for, and it was kind of a dark and brooding type color. But so fit with the Legion of the Damned, still fit with the army, whatever. So I have some Kolia green shade, but I've never used it over a brass color. And so what they do here is they do the Runeward Brass, Kolia green shade, and then go back and it's that trick where you use a layer color. It's mm-hmm. the same as your base color. And that's kind of the technique here It's using, you got your base color, you put a wash over it, and then you go back in with your base color, but it's really a highlight color because of the way the wash behaved.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here with you. I mean, it looks really good. I like the way that works. And yeah, you don't want to go immediately to a highlight color, because when you put that green over it, it's going to tint the majority of it, if not all of it. Even the raised areas are going to get a bit of a green tint to it. So when you go back over it with your base coat, you're going to bring the original color back out. And that's going to let you go in and highlight off of that.
Yeah, then they go into what's their go-to color here. That's the Stormhost Silver. Do you use Stormhoof's silver, Ricky?
Yeah, I use it every now and then. I like it. It's a good color. It goes on easily. Like, it's like the Retributor armor of silver.
Well, I use a lot of times Mithril silver, and I feel like that's too bright.
I get what you're saying there. Stormhoof's definitely not as flashy, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
I mean, I use mine so sparingly, my silver, that I still have a bunch of Runefang steel I need to get through before I could even think of buying that. So,
well, those were the comparables, right? Like Stormhold silver and Runefang steel are like a comparable color. Is that right?
Yeah, they're pretty close. Much. I think that there's a bit of a shade difference there, but I get
my habit. I use the same metals over and over again, and I mess with the washes. I haven't gone with the green shade before, but this is a very attainable tactic, and it gives what the end result, even if you don't go up to that Stormhoof silver, you get a very weathered looking thing. I mean, what they're trying to simulate here for the Deepkin is like that it's been underwater or what have you. So this is something you could apply to many different things, whether it be terrain, whether it be a belt buckle, an ancient pistol, like you got a relic pistol, like for the Death Watch we were just talking about or something. Your warlord trait that you put on your one frag grenade that is your damage D3+1 frag or crack grenade.
Best crack grenade in the Imperium. It's the holy hand grenade.
It is. But this army, most of the techniques, if you look at their all the tutorials and stuff they've been putting up online and even in the White Dwarf here, it's about making these metals look different, ethereal, something that you achieving a really spectacular effect without a lot of extra effort. Because I'll be honest, some of the armor of this army looks intimidating to paint. Not that they're overly creepy looking or whatever, but it looks like it's really hard to paint. But with just it's mostly done with some washes and highlighting of the base color.
You're talking about the Deepkin.
Yeah.
It's crazy to look at because I'm building the army right now. So I've been looking through the battle tome and looking at everything and trying to figure everything out. And then looking at the artwork, I'm like, oh, how'd they do this? How'd they do this? And when the White Dwarf come out, I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, that's it.
Okay. Well, I think this is relevant, especially to our last segment, because the Death Watch have those cool embossed, you know, engraved shoulder pads and stuff.
The shoulder pads,
the sigils and
yeah, everything. It kind of reminds me of Grey Knights. You know how Grey Knights have a lot of those same kind of features. You know, I think these techniques would look real good on those shoulder pads, because those shoulder pads, I mean, if we're honest, a Death Watch army would look kind of bland if you didn't pull that shoulder pad off.
All black is difficult. Now, I know people can pull it off and everyone's got their own technique or whatever, but it's still difficult. It's difficult to make it look amazing from 3 feet away or more. You know, somebody casually walking by the table may just glance over your mostly black army. But if you've got these kind of, you know, really detailed shoulder pads and contrast within your army, people are going to notice. They're going to come by. They're going to duck down to the table and take a look.
Yeah. And that's one of my favorite things about Death Watch armies is they keep the shoulder pad of their home chapter. You know, and so they kind of keep a little bit of their character, and I think that's really fun to see. So I think Death Watch armies in particular are a really neat way to kind of mix colors and stuff that you wouldn't normally mix together.
I know I'm steering everybody. I don't think that Kolia Green Shade is the next Nolan Oil. It is no Athonian Camo Shade. But I will say I'm painting a Deceiver right now, and I used as my first wash Athonian Camo Shade. And the green got lost, unfortunately. Only the brown showed up, so the green got lost in the gold. And I can't help but think, after looking at this tutorial, maybe I should have started with the Rune Lord Brass instead of the Retributor armor. Maybe there's something in there that doesn't reflect the green as well.
Yeah. Now, I used Valdor Gold, the Forge World Valdor Gold, which reminds me quite a bit of this brass. And you definitely don't lose the green on that, because I used, I think it was Coelia Green Shade. Let me check here. Yep, Coelia Green Shade. That's what I used over Valdor Gold, which is Forge World's color. And I basically kind of the same effect there. And yeah, you don't lose it over that. So yeah, go back and redo that.
That's good to know. Well, guys, that's the hobby segment in the show for this week. You guys want to add anything before we close up?
Play out in a Deepkin. That army's awesome. It's cool looking.
Well, dude, I've got my army specced out. I'm looking forward to it. I'm getting a little bit more and more into Sigmar every day. Yeah, looking forward to playing.
Also, I'm going to say is the nice thing about living in floating Aether Cloud cities is that you don't get crazy soul-sucking fish people floods.
Nope, we're going to come up there to you. It's coming.
The Aether Sea can be anywhere.
Yeah, dude, everything I have can fly. It's coming. It's coming to get you.
Well, guys, thanks for joining me.
I'm not scared.
You guys have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
See ya.
I am your father.